Housing Thud.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Good to have you along this Friday morning as we continue with Fallout, our special coverage of the financial crisis. It's been a long time since we've been able to use the phrase housing boom, at least in the present tense. Instead, another housing thud today. This one's pretty loud. The government says new home construction fell more than 6% last month. This is the lowest pace since the early part of 1991. Now, President Bush told the U.S. Chamber of Commerce this morning it's going to take time until things look better. He defended the government's interventions in the financial crisis.
The government intervention is not a government takeover. Its purpose is not to weaken the free market. It is to preserve the free market.
The president's comments were meant to calm markets, but with that housing number, it's not quite doing the trick. The Dow is down 142 points, about 1.6% to 8,836. The Nasdaq is down 17 points, about 1% to 1,700. The S&P 500 is down 14 points, about 1.5% to 932. European markets are still edging higher. Oil is just above $70 a barrel this morning. Yesterday, it dropped below 70 bucks a barrel. That's a big uh-oh for OPEC. So now the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries is calling an emergency meeting next week in Vienna to consider a production cut. This meeting wasn't supposed to happen until mid-November. Marketplace's European correspondent Stephen Beard is standing by. Stephen, how worried is OPEC?
Quite a bit, I would say. According to one estimate, the cartel's revenues have fallen by $1 billion a day since oil prices peaked in July. And Deutsche Bank has produced some interesting figures indicating some of the individual problems. Iran and Venezuela need prices to be around $95 a barrel in order to balance their budgets. But also the Saudis, always eager not to upset the Americans, are apparently supporting a cut because they're worried that the oil price collapsing could hit their budget quite hard.
And of course, falling oil prices tied to falling demand. Does anyone have a sense of how deep this recession is or is going to be?
Well, they only have to look at the figures. Figures out recently indicate that U.S. demand for oil fell by 8% in the year to September. And clearly, demand for oil, certainly in the West, is falling quite significantly. And demand in emerging markets doesn't appear to be growing fast enough to take up the slack.
All right. Marketplace's European correspondent, Stephen Beard, in London. Thank you, Stephen.
Okay, Renita.
General Motors and Chrysler, meanwhile, are stepping up the pace of their merger discussions. As Ashley Milne-Tite reports, a once unthinkable merger is now very much in the cards.
GM's turnaround plan was going reasonably well before the economic downturn got into full swing. George Magliano directs automotive research for Global Insight. He says these days, with credit tight and car sales slumping badly, GM needs a much quicker cost-cutting fix.
General Motors believes that putting the two companies together, basically, you could close a lot more plants, you could lay off more workers, and of course, you would cut the overhead and also some possible synergies, you know, as far as purchasing, et cetera.
Magliano says with GM stock trading around $6, the company would like a deal done as soon as possible. Banks that hold the debt of both companies also support a deal. GM is expected to report gloomy third-quarter earnings in the next few weeks. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Morning Report podcast for October 17th. At marketplace.org. Google is searching for ways to celebrate this weekend. The company delivered quite the earnings surprise last night. Profit was up 26% in the last quarter. Merrill Lynch, on the other hand, reported below expectations. In the next 2 weeks, Wachovia and Washington Mutual report results. All of these banks have been acquired in the last month. So here's the question. If they're turning in terrible earnings, could those deals fall apart? Rachel Dornhelm reports.
You'd think if something you've agreed to buy drops in value, it would make you reconsider the purchase, or at least renegotiate. Jim Wilcox is a professor at UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business. He says an acquiring bank like Bank of America might not see a large write-down at its troubled partner as an entirely bad thing.
By the time the combination actually takes place, the balance sheet of the acquired company, in this case Merrill Lynch, would look relatively healthier than it would have if they hadn't done this house cleaning.
There's another reason these bank sales are still seen as relatively solid. James Barth at the Milken Institute says the Treasury Department's move to inject capital into banks will help those that are buying distressed institutions.
That puts them in a better position to do acquisitions and offset some of the negative earnings reports.
Barth says before banks commit to a purchase, they've done due diligence. It's unlikely one bad earnings report will change their mind. I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
Executive pay for leaders of financial institutions has come under scrutiny during this banking crisis. The head of Lehman Brothers, Richard Fuld, took heat for his multi-million dollar bonuses during his recent testimony to Congress. Now there's word the head of Deutsche Bank will forego his year-end bonus. But as Megan Williams tells us, it may have little to do with generosity.
Call it the shame factor or the shameless factor. Either way, Joseph Ackermann made sure to get word out he would forego this year's bonus. The CEO of Germany's biggest bank said he and 17 other board members will pass on the money to more deserving colleagues. But as German finance commentator Tobias Piller says, there likely won't be much to pass on.
And his bank had to do big write-offs for losses in the United States and will lose something like 10 billion euros. In this case, really, the question is whether you can have a bonus at all.
Last year, Ackermann pocketed almost $20 million in extras. Deutsche Bank spokespeople wouldn't say how much this year's bonus might add up to. I'm Megan Williams for Marketplace.
With Congress on a break, Senator Arlen Specter is back in Pennsylvania. Today in Pittsburgh, he holds a hearing on how a foreclosure prevention program in his home state could serve as a model for the rest of the country. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler has more.
Pennsylvania has been experimenting with mandatory mediation. Before a foreclosure can be enforced, the borrower and lender must go before a judge and attempt to work things out. Senator Arlen Specter says the pilot programs help protect homeowners struggling with mortgages they can't afford.
Frequently there's a misunderstanding, sometimes there's misrepresentation or even fraud. And what happens on these mediation efforts is that they try to keep the people in their homes.
But Specter says many who qualify for the program are unaware of it. Same is true in New Jersey, where Kevin Wolf oversees the Office of Foreclosure.
When your property gets listed for foreclosure, you get 50 letters a day from people saying that they're going to help you. The court's letter might just be considered another one, and we have to somehow get through that clutter.
Senator Specter hopes today's hearings will cut through that clutter as foreclosures continue to rise. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
We tend to throw the phrase Wall Street around as shorthand for our financial system, for the economy, our nest eggs. But what's it like to actually be in the place? Reporter Sally Herships gives us a taste of what you might find these days in those eight blocks of Lower Manhattan.
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
Thanks to Gordon Gekko, people the world over have a very distinct idea of what Wall Street represents. Curran Palmer, Paul Binder Munn, and Susan Carey are in town from the UK. They know what they're looking for.
Business people in suits and big cars, Porsches, Mercedes, BMWs.
Yeah, and like people eating lunch at these really classy cafes where they charge $1 million for a sandwich. And they're still working while they're eating. In a stereotype, I guess.
And what did you see instead?
Tourists.
Tourists and shoppers. People going to the gym, running errands, ducking in and out of the Starbucks, and the Tiffany's that recently opened at number 37. Retail outlets and residential buildings have sprung up on Wall Street as the big financial firms have moved uptown or out of town, and the number of men and women in business suits on the street has declined. Steve Fraser has written two books on Wall Street's history. He says when people talk about Wall Street, they're talking about a place and a concept at the same time.
As a metaphor, for what American capitalism is all about, both in its worst aspects and in its best, Wall Street will always occupy a preeminent place in American life.
I mean, Wall Street's going to be Wall Street, you know.
Renu Sharma works in the area.
It's always going to be associated with financial institutes. But in terms of what Wall Street stood for, like 20 years ago, it's not the case.
Historian Steve Fraser's not so sure. He says Wall Street's residents may have changed, but its image is intact.
There's no place in the world that carries the emotional, political, economic significance in people's minds as does Wall Street.
Put it this way, you can take finance out of Wall Street, but you can't take Wall Street out of finance. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
President Bush is meeting this weekend with a couple European leaders to plan a conference to figure out some reforms for the world's financial system. One of Mr. Bush's guests will be French President Nicolas Sarkozy. So far, no French bank has gone under. None has required a government bailout. And some are even hoping to come out of all of this stronger than ever. John Lawrenson spells out the financial virtues of the frugal French.
Tonight, what with the financial crisis, it's pig's foot for dinner, not the seafood platter. But in France, people are used to living on a budget, partly because it's much more difficult than in the United States to spend money you don't have. Bruce Antolovich is an American who's been living in France for 7 years.
Most of the things that we call credit cards in France actually are debit cards, which debit directly from your account. And usually the negative balance that they allow you is much, much lower than the credit limit that you have with a typical credit card in the U.S. I would say at about $1,000.
Easily enough to afford the mountain bike Antolovich rides several times a week. He got seriously into cycling when his bank made him pass a medical to qualify for a mortgage. He had to take out life insurance too. Bernard Worms is general manager of France's Housing Information Board. He says guarantees like these, plus fixed-rate loans, go a long way to explaining why there hasn't been an increase in mortgage defaults in France, despite a bearish housing market.
We are not risk lovers. It's easy to get a mortgage if you have a full-time regular job, but if you have an irregular income, it will be difficult.
That conservative approach extends to the relationship between investment and retail banking. Christine Lagarde is France's finance minister. She says that caution is helping French banks weather the storm.
They generally operate on a business model which is 75% retail, 25% investment and market.
The waiter serving me my pig's foot will be the first to say all is not well with France's economy. 3,000 restaurants and cafes went out of business in the first 3 months of this year. Compared to the US, salaries are lower and more people are out of work. But in these panicky times, France's banking system looks a lot more trustworthy. In Paris, I'm John Lawrenson for Marketplace.
For more, go to marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.